How many, I saw that half of us were transactional, half was criminal. How many of us do trusts and estates for our clients? Wow. Okay. So I started in this industry about 26 years ago, and I had the very, very good fortune of having a friend in the LLM program who was pregnant and wanted to take maternity leave and didn't want to lose her job. So she asked me to job share with her at Allmerica Financial. And in that capacity, I was the person who was supporting the insurance agents going out to sell. So in an insurance agency, there's usually a general agent. And the general agent taught me a lot of different things. And one of the things that he taught me was that there are two things that sell: sex and fear. Okay. So as attorneys, since we're not selling sex, we have to sell fear. And the way that we sell fear is by providing information. And the way that we provide information is by explaining the very worst case scenario to our clients about what can happen during their life. Now, so what is the kind of information they need to know? Well, they come into your office, they're asking about some business stuff, or maybe they're actually coming into you for trusts and estates. And you have to explain to them that one of the most important reasons why we do this estate planning is because we need to manage assets at an incapacity or at a death. And people don't think of themselves as having an incapacity. People don't think that they could get hit by a car and then have a brain damage, a traumatic brain injury, and never be able to work again. People don't even think about their own mortality. But I think as attorneys, we're required to make sure that our clients really understand what can be at risk. And then in terms of the practicalities, there's the issue of what assets are at play. How are we going to manage assets? What are the tax consequences going to be? What are the probate considerations? I don't know any client who wants to go through probate because you have the time delays, you have the costs, and you have contests. So you really want to try to help your clients figure out a way to avoid probate and to kind of have their assets managed in a healthy way outside of probate. There are changes in the tax law. There are changes in clients' living situations, divorces, separations, their children's living situations, growing up, going to college, getting married, maybe not being in the best marriage, their siblings' relations. So all these things kind of come into play. And of course, one of the most important things is business matters. So in order to pull this all together, one of the things that I had to learn is to teach clients what I do as a trust and estates attorney, why they need to pay me what they pay me, and why in the end, implementing these strategies that we're going to discuss makes sense for them. So I start out by giving clients a 2-page document. Can you guys see this over here? I give clients a 2-page document. The first page is a list of their assets, what they own individually, what their spouse, if any, owns individually, and what they own jointly. And on the back page, I ask about specific things. I want to make sure that if they say that they're married, that I actually have a marriage certificate. If they say that they're divorced, I actually have a divorce certificate or a divorce decree. If they say that they adopted a child, I want to see the final adoption papers. So these are the kinds of questions that I go through. And the very last question I ask is it likely that you are going to be a defendant in a case? Now, why do I ask that? Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act. I'm worried that if I start doing estate planning and financial planning and taking assets and putting them into irrevocable trusts, that I am going to be personally liable to a creditor who gets a judgment against my client and then tries to enforce it. So that very last question is one of the most important to me. Once I get that information, I bring them into the office and I start talking to them about the realities of what happens. This thing that I'm about to do is usually an hour long. I'm going to do it very quickly so that you can get an idea of how the conversation goes. See that box? It's a coffin. See that? That's the client in the coffin. All right, so who are those guys outside of the coffin? Spouse, domestic partner, family, children. From this particular unit or from other units, it doesn't matter. This is the nefarious predator family member, but it could also be the nefarious business partner. Okay. These are the taxing entities. Since I'm New York based, I'll say IRS in New York State. And what are all these people doing? They're looking in the coffin. And what do you think they're looking for? What's in it for me? Right? So what's in it for them? In that coffin is going to be the assets that the client dies with, with assets titled in the client's name. So I already have the asset form. I know what I'm working with. It's usually real estate, maybe a vacation home, cash, and in this particular case, we have a lot more cash than most people, stock, LLC, any kind of closely held business entity, retirement accounts, life insurance, stuff. We have a lot of people who have a lot of collectibles. And then what do I do as an attorney? What does a good trust and estates attorney do? They pull assets out of this box so that we know that the spouse or the domestic partner and the children are provided for. We know that the predator business partner or predator family member can't take away from our beloved. And we also try to mitigate the effect of estate taxes that the IRS in New York State will impose. Okay, so this gives me the starting point to start talking about titling of assets. So when you title assets, I talk about tenancy by the entirety. I talk about joint tenants with right of survivorship. I talk about tenants in common, and I'm sure we all know all these different forms. Okay, excuse me. And what I frequently find is that this first piece of property, these days, people buy property before they get married, so they think that they have the benefit, the creditor protection benefit of tenancy by the entirety, but they don't. It's the attorney's responsibility to make sure, again, with the marriage certificate and with the deeds, that the timing is absolutely correct when you're giving advice about what is going to be creditor protected and what is not. And then we do all these different things in terms of forming Q-perts and all these different kind of life insurance. We do these islets. And then once I explain how all of these things work together, I could give them an estimate of what they need in particular. So islet will be $3,500. Q-pert will be $5,000. This will be this. This will be that. And then the client and I can work toward figuring out a triage approach about how to make their estate plan and their financial plan feasible. When it comes to figuring out how to do asset protection, especially for the cannabis industry, the closest related business, in my opinion, are obstetricians. It's the least amount of opportunity to get malpractice insurance. Assets are at most risk. So how do we not only protect against these guys at death, but how do we also protect against creditors? And there's a methodology that we have to employ. One is we have to start with titling. Titling is probably the most important thing that we can do as attorneys. Not only because we need to know whether or not a piece of property is owned tenants by the entirety or joint tenants with the right of survivorship, but because we need to understand what we're moving where. I'll give you an example. In some states, if you have a bank account that says Lisa and Allison, in some states, that would be joint tenants with the right of survivorship. In other states, it would be tenants in common. Huge difference in terms of the effect at death. If it's tenants in common, then it goes to each of the person's estates, and there's no automatic transfer. If it's joint tenants with a right of survivorship, then it goes to the survivor of the account automatically by operation of law at the moment of death. Well, that's a pretty important thing to understand when you're giving trust and estate advice, especially when you're trying to explain to someone here that, you know what, this is really tenants in common. It's really not joint tenants with the right of survivorship. So what's going to happen is it's going to be subject to your estate. It's going to be subject to your will. So the best thing to do is to pull assets out if possible. Now, the spouse, of course, is going to want to have as much control of assets as possible. They're going to be very, very worried about being able to maintain their lifestyle. They're also going to be worried if there are children in common that their children are going to be protected. The problem is, what about children from a prior marriage, which is very, very frequently the case? How do you deal with those situations? In my opinion, our community, our legal community, is not using prenuptial and postnuptial agreements as much as we can be in terms of asset protection and in terms of estate planning. And I think we need to think more about it. When we think about the risk that one of our spouses is taking in terms of being in the cannabis business, we need to make sure that if something is going to happen in terms of a creditor coming to get us or get our clients, that a postnup or a prenup can protect assets if you have to have a friendly divorce, which sometimes happens. And if you're true partners, the piece of paper that's filed in the civil court in terms, or the family court in terms of whether or not you're married, is really irrelevant. The most important thing is protecting the spouse and the kids. So most couples are willing to work together toward having that postnup or prenup in place in order to protect assets. Now, when I got married, I thought having a prenup was really romantic. Ask Allison, she'll tell you it was like, so not. My approach was, you know, we take finances off the table, we solve everything, we engage with the heart. For cannabis entrepreneurs, it's a little bit different. Cannabis entrepreneurs, they're looking for the long-term solution. What if something happens? What if somebody eats my Tootsie Roll and then kills his wife, and then the wife's surviving family sues me? Reality. And we need to deal with it. Bless you. All right. So in terms of this process of talking to the clients, and again, this is an hour-long conversation, going through all the different titling methods and doing all the different types of trusts, why a trust has to be irrevocable in terms of making sure that we get creditor protection, why an irrevocable trust results in a gift tax, and why gift taxes are less expensive than estate taxes. I mean, these are really, really difficult conversations to have because they're very, very technical, and clients don't want to hear the technical stuff. They just want to hear, what do I need? Just tell me what I need, sign it. But I honestly think that if we don't have this conversation and walk the clients through all the different permutations of an estate and a financial plan, then I think that it's remiss. So I've been doing this for 25 years. About 7 or 8 years ago, somebody called me and said, you're not going to believe this. I saw one of your sketches in one of my clients' boxes, safe deposit boxes. He did an estate plan with me. He had this sketch in the box. And when the attorney for the second wife went into the box and saw this, he laughed. He happened to have been my student. And he's like, hey, look at this. So it's funny. Clients actually keep this because they don't understand the documents that we even create for them. And what's even more funny is that clients refer you when they don't even know how effective you are in terms of your estate plan. So this is actually kind of a funny thing. I think that there are 8 things that we need to worry about in terms of creating a financial and estate plan for clients. And the 8 steps are, we need to make sure that we title our assets correctly. business agreements are critical. I had a client who had a chain of donut stores on Cape Cod, and he did the business with his mother. And when he got married, his mother didn't like the new wife, so the mother wanted the sister, the mother wanted the sister to come into the business. So client goes to then attorney, says, hey, listen, my mother is really pressuring me. It's a family business, wants my sister in the business. What should I do? The attorney says, don't worry about it. You got plenty of stock in the treasury. Do you know what treasury stock is? No. Okay. So when you start a corporation, when you start a corporation, there's stock, and in this stock, it's called treasury stock. So you issue out to, you know, shareholder one, shareholder two, shareholder three, and then whatever is left over is called treasury. And the people in an S corporation, the people who get to issue the treasury stock are the board of directors. So the mother was prevailing upon the son. Give stock to your sister, give stock to your sister. The brother said, no, I really don't want to do that. Mother gives stock to the sister. At least put your sister on the board of directors. At least do that. Show her that she has a commitment to the company. Show her that you consider her a valued employee and a valued family member. Client goes to then attorney, says, is that okay? The attorney says, yeah, that's fine. Don't worry about it. You've got the most shares. Nothing can happen. Well, what did happen? Mother and sister, as two of the three board members, voted to issue the rest of the treasury stock, reducing my client from 80% down to something like 20%, and they took over the business. So I came in to do an attorney malpractice case, and this is something that no attorney should ever make a mistake about, because you can't give advice without taking a look at the documents. And the documents drive everything. And if we don't have good documents, right, Emily? If we don't have good documents, then havoc happens. So the next step in terms of estate planning is not just having the S shares and not just having the C shares and not just having all these different things, but to do a really decent estate planning job for your clients is to take their stock and to put it into a trust. There are different types of trusts. There are revocable trusts, which basically avoids probate. It does nothing in terms of planning for estate taxes. It does nothing in terms of planning for gift taxes. The only thing it does is it keeps the assets out of probate. And if you become incapacitated, the trustee, the successor trustee, gets to manage the assets. Here's another place in terms of planning that I think that attorneys fall down on. In my opinion, every time a domestic relations matter comes into your office, somebody wants to get divorced, if you don't sit down and do a new estate plan for them, in my opinion, I think that's malpractice. Because people die during divorce proceedings. And if you're divorcing or you're being divorced, you definitely don't want your soon-to-be ex controlling your assets. So frequently what I see is somebody comes in, gets a divorce, and by the way, there's a power of attorney that the wife can take all the money. Wife has access to this account, that account, the other account. Okay, names get changed. But for a power of attorney, that specifically a general power of attorney, that soon to be ex has the legal right to go and take any of your assets and bring it into her own name or whatever. So in terms of asset protection and estate planning, these power of attorney forms are incredibly powerful, and people don't really give it the credit that they need to have. I already talked about nuptial contracts, Wills. Okay. So cannabis entrepreneurs have wills, we hope, that include a digital asset fiduciary. We're not seeing as much as we need to. We also need to have someone who's a literary trustee, because a lot of our cannabis entrepreneurs are writing treatises. And we also have to make sure that there's a specific power of attorney or a specific fiduciary to manage the business. If we have good documents, corporate documents to begin with, all of that is taken care of. But if we don't have good documents in the beginning, then it's cleanup time. And cleanup time is significantly more expensive than the stitching time. Where do we put? Where do we hide? Where do we protect our cash? So we have a problem in our industry about cash. We got a lot of it, and we really don't know what to do with it. I have some ideas. I differ a little bit with Emily, maybe because I'm New York based. That New York has fantastic laws with respect to creditor protection and retirement accounts. So you could put a lot of money in your retirement account and have it protected. The upside is that you could put, as of 2015, you could put up to $210,000 into your defined benefit plan retirement account. That's pretty good for our rich cannabis entrepreneurs. The downside is that they have to wait until they're at least 59 and a half to get it out. They have to put the money in terms of cash, because we're not allowed to have the banking. I called the IRS chief counsel's office, and I asked them about this form that gets filed whenever somebody makes a deposit over $10,000. So I said, like, what's up with that? Where do those go? What happens? What's the effect? And I was told, without a letter being issued to me, which is a significant issue, because usually they'll put something in writing. This was not in writing. I was told that this is a one-off kind of thing, that the IRS only looks to see whether or not there are multiple over $10,000 deposits. So the opportunity for financial planning is to have the client wait all year before they fund any particular thing. So before they fund an LLC that's going to purchase real estate, before they put into their retirement account up to $210,000. The other thing that we can do with this cash is a self-settled trust. There are certain states that are very debtor-friendly. They're debtor-friendly when you create a trust that is, according to the state's laws, creditor protected. So you can actually take money out of the state, and Delaware is a good state. Florida is a good state. Texas is a good state. Idaho is a good state. And you put money into their self-settled trust. Downside is you need to have a corporate trustee that's in that particular state that is managing the money. So you have to pay an administrative fee. The upside is it's creditor protected. So you have the ability to shelter some money. The other thing that we can do is buy into various LLCs or C corps with respect to recycling the money, buying real estate, putting money into children's 529 plans, putting money into children's minors trusts. There's a whole lot of ways to deploy cash that makes sense and that's creditor protected and that could be accessed in the future. The issue is, how many times you're going to be getting one of those letters, or the IRS is going to be one of those letters of 10,000 and more. So you have to be careful about that. With That's right. That's right. So if you're going to be funding your nieces and nephews or whomever's 529 plan, you got to keep it under the $10,000. That's easy to do a $9,000 gift. That's quite generous. The LLCs, like for buying. Yeah, I don't think so. I think that they just look at that $10,000 and over. Wait, we have a former U.S. attorney in the office. Let's ask him. That's right. Right. Okay. So Yeah. Okay, so that's really interesting, Barry, and I really appreciate your perspective on it. And that meshes with what the IRS chief counsel's representative said to me. In my experience, Chase Bank, if you have a $10,000 their own practice is if you have $10,000 deposit or any kind of $10,000 transaction, that automatically they do a SARS. So it's not just a matter of what the officials are going to be doing. It's also a matter of what the local bank is going to be doing as well, if anything. I am going to pass around. I do have materials. I did not get them in time, and my apologies for that. I'm going to be passing around an email list. I will put into the Dropbox a couple of different outlines, a couple of different articles, and a couple of different things. I will, once I get this list back, I will add you to the Dropbox, and then you could download the stuff, and then I'll take it off the Dropbox probably like in a couple of weeks. Thank you.
Thank you. Lisa Padilla.